More benefits of exercise for seniors.
Does an oral cleft palate affect the health of young adults?
Are there any benefits to colonoscopy after age 70?
And being stoned on the ride of your life.
Okay, that's what we're talking about this week on PodMed, the weekly look at the medical headlines from Johns Hopkins, posted on September 30th, 2016. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang, professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins, president of the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center in El Paso, where I'm also dean of the Paul L. Foster School of Medicine.
Now, Rick, I have got to tell our listeners that I always say to you, all right, I expect to hear something really clever in the promo, and I have to say that was extremely clever. Of course, we're going to turn right now to a journal we've never, ever featured anything from before. The Journal of the American Osteopathic Association, a study taking a look at the benefits of roller coaster rides with regard to dislodging kidney stones.
Elizabeth, this is one of the most bizarre studies you have picked. I mean, usually we sit down a couple days before the podcast and decide which studies we're going to talk about, and then we have this conversation. This is about individuals being stoned, specifically kidney stones. And the lifetime prevalence of kidney stones is about 11% in men and about 6% in women. And what these two physicians noticed was over a number of years, several other patients had reported passing kidney stones after being on the Big Thunder Mountain Railroad roller coaster ride at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom in Orlando. So they put all this together and said, gosh, I wonder if that roller coaster actually facilitates the passage of kidney stones. So they constructed a model of a kidney and the ureter passing all the way down to the bladder, put various size kidney stones in this model. They put it in a backpack on their back, and they rode the roller coaster 20 different times. Put in three different kidney stones and rode it 20 different times. Now, they didn't say whether they did it in one day or in a week. And then they measured the movement of the kidney stones. Did it actually facilitate passage? And what they discovered was, in fact, it did. And it depended upon where in the roller coaster they were. When they were sitting in the front seats, the passage rate was about 4 out of 24. However, when they were in the back seats, the passage rate was about 23 out of 36. And by the way, it depended upon whether the stone was in the upper part or the lower part as well. So this was pretty fascinating. You say, well, what's the medical application? If you know you have a big kidney stone, one that's not likely to pass all the way through, you might want to avoid being in a roller coaster because it might get stuck. If you had recent lithotripsy and all the little fragments haven't left the kidney or the ureter, you might want to ride in a roller coaster to get rid of it. Or for women that are going to be on vitamin D later and calcium, we know that increases the risk of kidney stones. If you have small ones, you want to get rid of them before you start that therapy, heck, get on the roller coaster.
This could be a full family kind of an endeavor, I suspect. And interestingly, I thought that the fact that they had to sit in the back of the roller coaster suggests a lot about the ride of a roller coaster to me that I was unaware of. I didn't know that it was a more robust ride, if you will, at the end of the thing.
Well, Elizabeth, obviously you and I have not ridden roller coasters together because you know as a kid you always want to get in the back seat. You have more screams from the back seat than you do from the front seat.
Well, I did not know that, but I thought this was really fascinating. And of course, for so many people who suffer from kidney stones, maybe it's kind of a fun way to deal with that before they get into the ureter and get stuck.
Yeah, this was a fun study. I'm glad you picked it.
Let's turn now to Annals of Internal Medicine, two studies we're going to take a look at this week. One of them was relative to, and we toot this horn all the time, and we're going to do it again, the benefits of exercise, this with regard to mobility in seniors.
And you can see this as exercise as medicine. And mobility in seniors is particularly important. When they become immobile, it increases their risk of dying, of suffering things like depression, and it seriously affects the quality of life. We've talked before about how exercise can decrease your risk of things like hypertension and diabetes, and actually cancer as well. In this particular study called the LIFE study, Lifestyle Intervention and Independence for Elders study, they previously reported routine exercise in the elderly, doing 150 minutes per week of walking, plus light weights and balance, led to decreased incidences of immobility. Immobility by itself, and there was a 13% reduction in the original study, may not be the most important parameter, but what the length of immobility is, and repetitive instances as well. In this particular study of over 1,635 sedentary individuals between the ages of 70 to 89, they randomized them to either just giving them education or the exercise regimen that I mentioned. And they monitored their major mobility disability, What they showed is that those that were involved with regular exercise, it decreased their major mobility disability by 25%.
Were these older adults who were previously sedentary?
In fact, that's exactly the case. This is a substantial improvement in their quality of life. One of the things that was mentioned in the accompanying editorial is how, as healthcare providers, we fail to emphasize this, particularly in the elderly. They recommend we treat it as a vital sign. You should take an exercise assessment, treat it as a medicine, and prescribe it, and follow it, and document it in the chart as well.
It's also an opportunity in many cases for people to socialize, which we know also has protective value.
And many times these structured physical activities take place at YMCA or senior centers, so a lot of benefits.
I guess I would just add also a study that we did some years ago that took a look at bedridden older adults who were offered hand weights and the benefit of that. So I think it's just so clear that the benefits of exercise are abundant. Let's stay in Annals of Internal Medicine then, and let's talk about, since we're also talking about the elderly, hey, should those folks undergo colonoscopy or not? That's those age 70 and older.
USPSTF, United States Preventive Services Task Force, has recommended that routine screening not be needed in individuals over the age of 75 without any randomized controlled trials. Having said that, Medicare still reimburses screening colonoscopy without any upper age limit. So this study attempted to evaluate the effectiveness and safety of screening colonoscopy in individuals over the age of 70. They looked at Medicare beneficiaries between 2004 and 2012. They were at the age of 70 to 79. They were at average risk for colorectal cancer. Then they either did or did not undergo routine colonoscopy. And they looked at the 8-year risk for identifying colorectal cancer. In individuals between the ages of 70 to 74, there was just a modest benefit in the screening colonoscopy group. It decreased the risk of colorectal cancer from about 2.6% to about 2.2%. And over the age of 75, there was really very minimal, if any, benefit at all. Conversely, the risk of having an adverse event in the colonoscopy group doubled between the ages of 70 to 74 versus 75 and higher.
Okay. I guess the other thing I would juxtapose against that is the fact that so many of these screening modalities that examine a stool sample are turning out to be much more practical and reliable, and I suspect that that's going to increase. So maybe we'll eliminate the need for these folks to consider colonoscopy.
If you do something non-invasive, checking for fecal occult blood testing, blood in the stool, that's obviously non-invasive. Second point is it really effective? Because remember that detecting polyps and removing them prevents colorectal cancer 10 or 15 years down the road. Well, if individuals haven't had polyps before the age of 75 and they develop them after the age of 75, the chance of them turning into colorectal cancer is pretty small. So screening may not be as effective in that older group.
Right. I guess I also would say, though, that as we're increasing the lifespan and we see way more people aging into the octogenarian plus group, who knows what will happen with regard to polyps?
Point well taken, but currently we can't recommend it.
Okay. Finally, then, let's turn to JAMA Pediatrics. As you've already said, something we have never talked about. Cleft palate, very common congenital abnormality, and its long-term impact.
About 2 out of 1,000 live births result in a child that either has a cleft lip or a cleft palate or the combination of the two. This is a study that can only be done in a place like Norway, in which every individual is registered at the time of birth. They have a unique patient identification number, and they're followed for a long period of time. So there have been some reports that cleft lip or palate may be associated with some learning disabilities, and some concern it may be associated with a lower survival. To address that, what this Norwegian study did was they looked at all births between 1967 and 1992. From there, they teased over 2,300 individuals that had either a cleft lip or palate, and they followed them into adulthood. Here's what they discovered. In individuals that had a cleft lip, either with or without a cleft palate, there was no significant difference in mortality or morbidity compared to the routine population. But the child that had a cleft palate alone was associated with a substantial risk of having intellectual disability, about 11-fold higher risk, 3-fold higher risk of having anxiety disorders, about a 7-fold increased risk of having autism spectrum disorders, 11-fold risk of having severe learning disabilities, and it tripled their mortality. If it's a cleft palate alone, that suggests there may be other either genetic abnormalities that we need to track early on and to address them as we see them.
Sure. And also employee interventions right from the get-go if we know that the risks are so much higher.
Absolutely.
On that note, I'm going to talk about the roller coasters and the kidney stones. You knew that, of course, already on the blog. That's a look at this week's medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang. Y'all live well.